fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
Hey, welcome to the program. Glad you're here. We've got a little update on Miley Cyrus and her cake licking for abortion. What is happening now with the death culture in the Netherlands? They just euthanized a 17-year-old because she was raped and it was causing her too much mental anguish. So they killed her at her request. It's unbelievable. The media is starting to turn now on Joe Biden. What a surprise. Apparently he's not socialist enough for them, at least at this point. And I have to tell you the story about the guy who was driving to the lottery office to pick up his $50,000 check because he had picked his lottery numbers by using a fortune cookie. Well, it turns out he won a little more. Details on him in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, security researchers recently discovered hackers have breached an analytics service with an open source project modifying files to embed malicious codes on over 4,600 websites. So that's no big deal. Hopefully you haven't gone to one of those websites. The malicious code can log content users' information into data fields secretly and then sends the information to a server located in Panama. But what could go wrong? Your information is, I mean, very well could be already on the internet, the dark web, for sale or in use. And you're just not going to be able to follow all of these things. And you shouldn't have to worry about all these things. You're not an expert in it. I'm not an expert in it. But LifeLock is. They were the first in the business, and they are the best in the business. Nobody can, you know, prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But they are the ones that have been leading the way for decades, and they will see the threats that you might miss on your own. So if you order today, you're going to get 10% off your first year if you use the promo code Beck. So call them now at 1-800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, or use lifelock.com, promo code Beck, and get 10% off now at lifelock.com. So just leading the life of luxury, the swinging bachelor. I'm on my way as a swinging bachelor who is married, on my way driving to the lottery office to pick up my $50,000 check. Now, this is what this guy in North Carolina was doing. He went to play Powerball, and his granddaughter had given him a fortune cookie, and on the bottom of the fortune cookie were numbers. So he decided, you know what? I'm going to play those numbers. And so he did. Somehow or another, when he was on his way to pick up what he thought was $50,000, it turns out it was a little more. And as he's looking at the numbers, now he doesn't watch TV, he says, so he doesn't pay attention to any of this. And he saw as he was driving, he saw the numbers for the Powerball, and he realizes, I think I won more. Now, he didn't know how much. He had no idea. He just played Powerball. He didn't know what the jackpot was, nothing. His granddaughter had just given him some numbers, so he just played it. So he's on the way, and he calls up the office, and he's like, you know what? I think I have all of the numbers. I was coming in to pick up 50,000. I think it might be more. I think I have all of the numbers. And they said, yeah, you do. And he said, wow, how much is it worth? How much is it worth? They said, well, more than 50,000. It's $344 million. Quote, he said, quote, dang, I got them all. I love that. He said he called his wife and said, you ain't gonna believe this, but I got it all. Now he says he hopes that the windfalls don't change him. He's going to give $1 million to his brother. I mean, how about something for granddaughter? I mean, she was the one that brought you the cookie. $1 million to his brother to make good on a deal. Apparently they made donate to charities, yada, yada, yada. He took the lump sum of $223 million. He said, I'm still going to wear my jeans, just maybe I'll wear some newer ones. I think it's fantastic.
So I don't understand, though. If you win $50,000, I think that, does that mean you've hit five or six?
You know, I don't know
how many numbers you've hit, but you've hit a lot of the numbers, right? Aren't you sitting there staring at that thing 100 times when you've hit for $50,000 to check it, and you miss the fact that you won $300 million?
Well, maybe it was the Powerball number that he didn't check, because he's not a lotto player.
Right.
He wasn't playing it for the Powerball. He just, you know, probably went into a convenience store, put those numbers in, and just saw, oh, wow, I got the five right, and didn't, I don't know. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, I don't
but
know
he wasn't playing it, you know, to win the $344 million. He had no idea how much it was worth.
That's incredible.
That's a good day.
And it's a type of thing that if I'm working at the lottery, you know, the headquarters, and someone calls me and says, "I think I won $50,000," but I'm looking at the numbers, I think I have them all. What I say is, come directly to my desk, and I will give you the $50,000 in exchange for the ticket, and
exactly.
Then you need to leave immediately.
Just ask for me.
Yes. Don't go to someone else, because they might do you don't know what's going to happen.
It's
very sketchy
around here.
Yeah. And then you take the you give them 50 grand somehow.
I might give them 51.
Yeah, we're giving you a tip.
Yeah.
51.
I just want you to know, you're getting a great deal here.
And he walks out. You turn it in, $344 million.
Yeah.
That's the way to play that.
I think I'd still take the lump sum, because the officials might be coming to look for me. So I'd take the lump sum. And when I say I, it would be somebody else not related to me that would show up for the check. I'm just saying.
Why do we sit here every time and talk about it as if it's $344 million when it's really $223 million?
Well, it's not even... Wait. It's not even that. You can take the 344 over 20 years or whatever.
Right. It's just a silly, you know, like, yeah, well, we'll give you... First of all, almost everyone takes the lump sum, which there's some question about whether that's a good idea for some people.
I think most people.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some... Because it's always been statistically you should take the $223 million, because it pays off in the long term. But they see the way that people use it, and it's like, maybe you should be guaranteed a payment next year. Maybe that's a good thing. In 19 years, there's still a payment coming in. I think that's there's a question about that one.
I think if I believed that money and these states and lotteries and everything else would actually stand,
yeah,
then I probably would take it over time. It would be stupid to do it, but I would probably take it over time, because I'd be like, I don't know. I mean, I want something left for my kids. I mean,
$250 million.
I could see myself going, what? It's only $50 million. You know, five times, six times.
Right. Someone's going to scam you into a real estate investment that doesn't exist.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
But I mean, they always say this $344 million. It's like, let's be honest about it. It's $223 million. Well, if you want to take it over a very long period of time, you'll get a interest, essentially. Right. Like,
well,
but again, you have to also factor in inflation and all those other things. A payment in 20 years is a lot different than a payment today.
Well, but let's be real. I mean, why do we say it's $223 million when it's actually about $112 million?
That's true. Where does he live again?
He lives in North Carolina.
Okay. Yeah, that's not, you're going to lose a lot. You're going to lose.
You lose about half. You have a 40%.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're going to lose around half of it, right? And then, of course, every time you spend it, you lose more. And
this is a depressing story now.
It is. Yes,
you've
we've
ruined
it.
This story. we had a happy grandfather who had retired. You know,
this guy's life is over, is what I'm saying.
Boy, I'd hate to be you, Jack.
I hope you can buy a nice coffin with it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I tried to start. Look at, he wrecked it.
Yeah,
okay, let me try this.
Okay.
Let me try this. Here's a guy that should not win the lottery. Tracy Morgan.
The comedian?
Yes.
Okay.
Who would have thunk that Tracy Morgan would go out and buy a new Bugatti? Okay. But he bought a new Bugatti, and it was $2 million. And he bought it at Bugatti in Manhattan. Now, here's your
He's
first...
He's not shopping around for the lower price Bugatti,
right,
apparently.
Right. Now, here's the thing. If you're buying a Bugatti, don't live in Manhattan. What are you going to do? You're going to drive it 3.5 miles an hour?
Right.
In stop and go traffic with giant potholes and people, you know, hitting, you know, in the, hey, back up. I've got the right of way here. I mean, it's not a pleasant place to be. with any car.
It sucks to drive there anyway.
Yeah.
A Bugatti, I can't imagine, especially with that, like, that gigantic engine. You're talking 1,000 horsepower in that thing, trying to do a manual shift going around, you know, 44th Street. Like, that's not a good...
It's just ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. It's just ridiculous. Okay, so he was driving his car for about 10 minutes in Manhattan. He just closed your eyes because you know what's coming.
Oh, what did he do?
10 minutes. Nothing. A woman in a late model Honda CRV tried to make a right turn from the left lane and crashed into his Bugatti and scraped it and grated against the entire side. Okay? He gets out of the car and he's like, "What were you thinking?" She was like, "I don't know." He's like, "This is, I've had this car for 10 minutes and it's a Bugatti." "Oh, I'm sorry. Looks pretty. What does that mean, a Bugatti?" "It's a $2 million car."
Oh my gosh.
So he literally had it for about 30 minutes from the time he drove off the lot and signed the deal, 30 minutes total before she took and just destroyed his Bugatti.
She's got insurance, though, right? I mean, she's got liability insurance. Surely that will cover...
I'm sure that will cover the $1.89 million car.
Oh, God. It's beautiful, too.
Oh, I know. It's a convertible. So it's not only... It's used, so you got to expect some dings. It's used, so that's why it was $1.8 million. This was cheap for the Bugatti because it's a convertible, which apparently is very rare.
Very rare, right.
And so he's driving it for the first 10 minutes. I think that's worse than the worst lottery winner. I mean, because that just shows how stupid you are. Don't buy a Bugatti in Manhattan.
Especially if you're Tracy Morgan, who should stay out of all automobiles. Right, like he was the guy who he almost died in a massive car crash. Like why are you even get it? You should live in the city.
I don't remember that.
Oh my, yeah, that's his whole. That's the, you know, he was, you know, because he did Saturday Night Live and he was on 30 Rock, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he
yeah,
had like
yeah.
You know, a bunch of stuff, and he almost got killed. It was in I think 2014 ish.
Oh wow,
and he was almost killed in a giant wreck. It was on the New Jersey Turnpike, and
get out of that area.
Yeah, leave.
Get out of that
area. Here's an idea, Iowa. Okay, Kansas.
Here's an idea. Subways. If you're going to live there, take a subway.
It's a scary thing when the subway's the safe alternative.
I'm telling you, we lived in New York for a while. The last thing you want is a nice car. What you do is you just go buy a junker. Because I literally saw a car take the front bumper off of a taxi cab at about 65 miles an hour on, I think it was like 42nd Street. And it's just bare. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm walking down the street and I see this car. There's nothing. It's all green lights. And I see this car. It was actually the reverse. It was a car and a taxi cab came up behind it, and this car was just, you know, an out-of-town person like, "I don't know, 42nd Street. I'm trying to find 41st. Where is that? Do I take a left?" And so it's just puttering down the street, and this cab comes, and it just clips it. It's got to be going 60, 70 miles an hour. And it just clips the front of this car, and the bumpers catch on each other, and it pulls the bumper off the other car. And so now the bumper is just kind of like spinning in the middle of the road. The guy in the cab didn't even tap on his brakes. That's Manhattan, okay? You buy a crappy car and you park it. And when you come back and it's like burned to the ground and everything is gone, you're like, huh? And you move on.
Right, exactly.
You just move on.
You go to walk down the street in New York, you'll see those little rubber like things that you put in your trunk and they hang over your bumper because your bumper gets hit randomly so often,
right,
that people just protect when they park, they put a little piece of rubber just hang over there so hopefully the car bounces off and
you just need
cause
like
damage.
You just need a Nerf car.
Yeah,
you know, just take a piece of crap and then take a bunch of Nerf footballs and just tape them all around your car, and you have a chance that when you get out of New York, you still have a really crappy car, with tape marks where you had all, and that's good. That's a good way to get out of New York with your car. Bugatti. All right. Well, let me tell you about Norton Security. Norton Secure VPN is now available, and a VPN is a virtual private network. And you know what one of these are is because every time you've ever watched Benji do anything when he's on an impossible mission with the Impossible Mission Force, Benji is always using a VPN. That's why they can't trace him. They never know where he is. A VPN is really good. You don't have to be an international spy. What you have to be is somebody who is sick of Facebook and Google tracking everything you do. You have to be somebody who just doesn't want people to come in and steal the stuff off of your computer, because you're really, in effect, not using your computer. You're using a virtual private network. And so they can't really trace it back. And it's good for security, good for your security. This is something that everybody now thinks, well, I don't have a problem with that. You will. Maybe you don't buy it today, but you're going to buy it in a year or two. You're going to have one. Everyone's going to have one because you have to. If you're smart, you get one now. A Norton Secure VPN. Now, protection starts at about $3.33 a month. Just head to norton.com/VPN. That's norton.com/VPN. 10-second station ID. This is the Glenn Beck Program. I'm really looking forward to talking to Laura Logan.
Yeah,
I really like her.
She's saying some pretty interesting things. I mean, this is a highly respected journalist who
60 Minutes,
and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And lately has been saying some things a little critical of the world of journalism.
To the point to where it's sad. It's really sad that she looks almost crazy for saying it, only because you're looking at her going, you're not going to survive. How are you going to survive? You know, she is so blunt and so straightforward, and exactly the kind of journalist all journalists should be. But that is so rare now. It makes it. She looks like a solar flare, you know?
Yeah.
She just looks like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What's happening over there? And all she's saying is, I don't know, maybe we should check the facts.
maybe not be biased against one party.
Or at least admit our bias.
Yeah. Well, she just did some reporting on the border. And was showing that maybe things are more of a crisis than the rest of the media seems to think that they are.
I can't wait to talk to her about that.
Yeah. I mean, because she was there. She did, I think, she's working with Cheryl. She did some reporting for Cheryl Atkinson's show. And, went into real depth on the border and what was going on down there. And, it's, of course, a totally different picture than what everyone else is showing.
And isn't it amazing that there are two women, both, I think, from CBS?
That's right. Yeah, Cheryl was from CBS, too, wasn't she? Yeah.
And they were both really credible national reporters.
And still
international.
Are.
And still are. Mm-hmm. But, no, I mean for CBS, though. And she was on 60 Minutes. Laura was on 60 Minutes, which, that was the pinnacle. You got to 60 Minutes, you were certainly credible, or Oprah Winfrey.
She was CBS News' chief foreign affairs correspondent for 13 years.
Wow.
That's not how
she's being treated now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This is what happens when you break. I mean, she's always been a good reporter, though. I mean, it's not like anything is new. Look at this. I mean, looking at these. This list of awards, it's like half a page. She was very highly respected and I think still is, but she's just now that she's taking on her industry, that support is going to erode quickly, right? You're just not supposed to say things. It's like, it's like that, every media source would be critical of the thin blue line, right? Like that you're not supposed to say, you're not supposed to talk about that. Well, this is the same thing that journalists have, right? They all close ranks. I mean, the fact that you saw them closing ranks around this ridiculous Daily Beast report the other day, where they came out and they were like, hey, this day laborer from New York City, let's ruin his life because he posted the Nancy Pelosi slightly slowed down video And they went and did an expose on his life and showed his picture and said all the jobs he's had and seen it, and highlighted his relationship troubles and his criminal brushes with the law and on and on and on and on, just trying to destroy this guy's life at any cost.
And like,
he's, you know, look, I'm sure, you know, I don't know, other than what I read in the report, I don't know anything about the guy, but he does not seem like a power player in the United States. And the fact that he posted a video slightly critical or mocking of Nancy Pelosi, one of the most powerful people in the world, and then he's the one getting the expose about him, not Nancy. Nancy, no one questions anything she does. Just, is she going to impeachment fast enough is about the hardest question she's ever received. And instead, they go and they do this expose of this poor guy who's a day laborer in New York City. And again, imagine the reverse, an African-American day laborer here that the left can go after. Imagine if some conservative media source was outing African-Americans who are powerless in our society. What, you know, then we get plenty of reporting on it. You're not supposed to do that. I mean, and reporters rallied around the Daily Beast guy saying, oh, this is absolutely valuable information about this guy because we might be able to hire him for $8 an hour next week. It's like, it's ridiculous. So you're not supposed to do this. And yeah. Lara's doing it.
And she will be joining us in about 30 minutes. Lara Logan on the program.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
Okay, out of all the things you have to worry about, What do you really have to worry about? I mean, you've got a laundry list of things to worry about. The biggest thing I worry about are my kids. I worry about my kids. I worry about, you know, what their life is going to be like. And then you have all these other things that you worry about. What's going to happen with the election? What's going to happen with this? What's going to happen with my job? What are my kids even looking at on the internet, et cetera, et cetera? Do you know most Americans over terrorism, mugging, when it comes to crime, most Americans are worried about somebody breaking into their house. Take this one off your plate, man. This is so easy. Simply Safe has taken all of the reasons you may not have home security off the table. You can install it in less than an hour. You never have to sign a long-term contract or wait for an installation window. You're never going to talk to a salesman. You're going to get all kinds of benefits. It's $14.99 a month, and you get a free security camera when you order right now. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Take control of your life and get this worry off your plate. Simplysafebeck.com. Welcome to the program, Mr. Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, the podcast that you can hear and download anywhere you hear a podcast. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Glenn.
So you are unleashed about...
Well, I was kind of interested in the fact that Lou Dobbs is calling out Republicans for being traitors because they're not supporting Donald Trump's tariffs. And I thought, since when are Republicans traitors for being free trade people?
What time did that monologue happen?
You know, they're cowards and traitors, and they are committing suicide and bringing down the country with them.
Well, I mean, I will say that Lou Dobbs has always been a tariff guy from back in the day. I mean, he was never been a conservative. But he's always been a big tariff guy, going back to his years at CNN.
But he knows for a fact that Republicans have not been tariff.
No, of course. How do you not at least include that in the analysis?
I know.
Right? I mean,
he doesn't. He doesn't. No. He doesn't bake that into anything.
It's been the exact opposite position of every one of these people that's been elected for the past 50 years. And, mm-hmm. you know, of course, obviously the pro-union left has been the ones asking for tariffs all this time. Mm-hmm. So they're talking, they say now the tariffs as requested by Trump, if implemented, and again, we hope this is a...
Which ones? The Mexican?
The Mexican ones. Okay. Just the Mexican ones, if implemented. And we hope it's a negotiation. We know how this stuff works because, you know, Trump threatens these things and hopefully they don't come to pass. But if they do, it would be the largest tax increase in 35 years.
Wow. Really?
That's a big number.
Yeah, it is.
Now, of course, that's on top of other tariffs. In addition, it's on top of a big tax cut, right? So it doesn't mean that when he started to when we would be here would be the biggest tax increase. But from where we are right now to the end of these Mexican tariffs would be the biggest tax increase in 35 years. And I just don't know why, you know, again, like this is, I know something he believes and it's something that you know, conservatives have disagreed with the entire time I've been alive.
But
until now,
that they have all fallen apart. The arguments have completely fallen apart. We won that one. Even the Democrats were against tariffs. You know, I mean, it was old think. And you know, I'm happy to see. First of all, aren't tariffs something that the president needs the Senate for?
No, I mean, tariffs. So he's going to do it. The way he's going to do this is interesting. And one another reason why it's going to be a problem. He's basically going to have to do another emergency declaration to get the tariffs through. Now, we know we had an issue with the last one, and a lot of our listeners did as well, and that, like, we really think the border is a big deal. We really want the wall. But, like, is this the right way to do it? Yeah. If you remember, a bunch of Republicans voted against him on that, just not enough to get to override the veto. Here, you have a serious issue where apparently in the meeting, there were no senators on Trump's side in the meeting when it came to the tariffs.
And this is something that should go through Congress, but he's trying to circumvent that process again.
Again, like, trade authority in the Constitution is Congress.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be through Congress. Right. Congress gave a lot of this authority to the president. However, the president has to justify it. So to justify it, his approach here is going to likely be, and we don't know for sure, he hasn't released this certainty, but this is what the White House sources are saying, is that he would have to go through another emergency declaration, which would either be amending the one that already exists or creating a brand new emergency declaration. So again, the Congress would have a chance to override it. There is no evidence that Republicans would stand up to him to the numbers to get to 67 votes. And this also includes the House would have to also get to 2/3. There's no evidence on any issue
that they would stand up to Trump.
So, I mean, like, they most of this is them just talking a big game. They want to say they're trying to hopefully influence Trump before these things go into effect. Maybe they can move him. Maybe they can delay them. These are the games that they play. In reality, is the Republican Congress going to overturn a veto from Donald Trump on anything? I think
Probably the answer to that is no.
I don't,
especially
they
not
all
now.
Talk a big game, but they're not going to do that. And, like, you know, a lot of the stuff they shouldn't be overturning. Trump's done a lot of really good things. This one in particular, though, has been against the philosophy of the party for at least 50 years. So
the problem is that you Donald Trump is under such attack right now, and has been the whole time, that anything that even sounds like you're against him, you're immediately tossed to the side.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, I came out for Justin Amash just to say I think he's a good guy and I think he believes in the Constitution.
Which is all true, by the way.
I'm against impeachment and what he said about impeachment, and I'm against him running in 2020. That doesn't seem to matter.
No.
Not to Breitbart or anybody else. They're just saying, oh, Glenn Beck wants impeachment. No. No,
are you on the Trump train or not?
Well, we're saying...
I don't know. Maybe I'm not on anybody's train.
Justin Amash is a solid conservative.
He has his problems. He has some things that I disagree with. You know, when it comes to Israel, et cetera, et cetera. I disagree with those things, but I'm fine with that. We should disagree with things. I mean, we can't... You'll never be in lockstep with everybody. But that doesn't mean.
But he's got 100% rating from FreedomWorks.
Yeah,
100%.
I know.
Yeah.
So to throw, we can't throw people away like this. We can't throw people away. We're eating our own, and we're seeing this happen now. Do you see how they are just coming after Joe Biden?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Today there was a bunch of news stories about it.
Plagiarism, and he's lying about the civil rights marching all of that.
There was the editorial that came out about how, you know, we need a JFK. We need a younger guy with vision. We don't need another Hillary Clinton. I mean, they are coming after him.
They also dug up when he was 29 years old and running, that he used all these attacks against his opponent, how old he was.
Yeah.
Like you know, they're like, oh, my opponent was fighting polio. I'm fighting, you know, it's totally ridiculous. And he wound up winning the race by, I think, 3,000 votes. It was a very close race. Look, you expect a field of 24. They realize he's ahead. The latest polls have his lead shrinking a little bit, so it'll be interesting to see if any of this stuff
32 works. 32-18 is the last one I've seen.
Still a nice big lead.
Still.
He's still
14 points.
It's his to lose, right?
Yes.
If he was a great candidate, then,
which he's not.
Which he's not. He's a terrible candidate. And he loses, you know, I mean, he's lost every time he's tried to run for president and really been buried, you know, the other two times.
Yeah.
If he has a chance, I mean, this is his chance to win. He walks in here as with a massive lead. He's got a field of 24 people, 17 of which are at 0 or 1%. So, I mean, there is not a lot, like the field feels really big, but there's not a lot of competitors there.
Even when he came out for their pet project, the climate change stuff yesterday, they bashed him on that because that was plagiarized. He didn't give credit to the person who wrote that bill. Did AOC have to put up with that when she released Green New Deal?
But they don't believe him on that. They want a hardcore socialist.
Yeah, they do.
You know, they want. Yes, did you see what AOC said yesterday?
About
your right to a profit?
Yeah.
That it's not a right. Before your privilege of profit comes the right to everyone having a decent house.
She's frightening.
She's terrifying. But the people, you know, behind her are the same people behind Bernie Sanders, and they're the same people behind, you know, pretty much all of them, except for Joe Biden.
And Biden, I read a very sad article the other day about how the relationship between Biden and Obama, and that, like, Obama apparently, you know, encouraged him pretty strongly not to run in 2016 because they, you know, it was Hillary's thing and she's the one that's going to do this and blah, blah, blah. So their team really came at him. And of course, he was going through the death of his son. So he found a way to not run, essentially. And of course, like, you know,
and regretted it.
Yeah, who knows what would have happened, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, there's been these conversations. You know, you have people, a lot of the Obama people have moved on to other campaigns. They're working for other candidates. Obama is not coming out and endorsing anyone. He's just kind of hanging back. And he's helped. He has helped. And this is a big thing. He did give the 2012 email list to Joe Biden, which is huge. I mean, as far as fundraising and everything else. So it's not like there's been no cooperation, but like there's just
But he's not he's not supporting him.
Yeah, it's sad.
Other than the email list. Because
Obama can't. Obama is looked at as
I don't think he wants
almost,
to either.
I don't think so either. But he's looked at on the left as almost a Glenn Beck now. He is not fashionable with them at all.
No.
He is not the guy who they look at him as like you were kind of a traitor.
Like I use yourself as someone who's unfashionable. No, but I mean, look, Biden's still winning the primary. So, I mean, it's
I know that.
It's not that unfashionable.
But did you
I'm saying Barack Obama, that Barack Obama is out of fashion with the left. Right, he's no longer
because he's not a socialist.
Well,
although I think
he is.
He has those tendencies.
He had the opportunity. He wasn't a revolutionary.
Yeah.
But he's got a big. Yeah. I mean, his. You think about what is of picking a vice president. It is a one-person presidential election. Barack Obama got to select essentially his successor, right? If something happens to him, who's the one person in the United States I want to be president? He picked Joe Biden. Now he's not endorsing Joe Biden.
It's pretty
like,
weird.
It is amazing, right?
And do you guys see when they asked him about that, when they asked Biden, why isn't Barack Obama endorsing you? I didn't want him to.
Yeah.
I asked him not to.
Yeah.
And then he said, and besides, he didn't. And then he stops himself.
Offer.
But he didn't want to endorse me.
Yeah.
But I told him, no, I don't want your endorsement. I want to give the rest of these kids a fighting chance. And that would just make it too unfair.
That's ridiculous.
It's asinine.
And it is ridiculous from Obama. Obama should be endorsing him.
Yeah,
he told us. He stood in front of the American people and said, hey, if I get sick, if I get injured, if
he can
someone,
keep his doctor?
No, not that.
Oh, okay.
You cannot keep your doctor. But
right.
you can keep Joe Biden. If I have to leave office for whatever reason, the one person who should lead this country is Joe Biden.
But I don't think anybody listened to that. Because if that was it, if I get sick, he followed it with, I can keep my doctor. If I get sick, you can keep Joe Biden. We wouldn't have Obamacare today if that was the promise.
Fair.
So CarShield is our sponsor this half hour, and I am, for one, thrilled that I have it. I have used cars, and there is nothing better than CarShield. When your warranty runs out, That's surprisingly when everything goes wrong. It's almost, now I know this is a conspiracy theory, but that's what I'm known for. It's almost as if our car companies, how long is the warranty? 4 years? Okay, make that part to last 4.5 years. I mean, it's just, it's almost that bad. And now you can't just go and replace things. Now a sensor goes and it's $1,000. You need Car Shield. You can have your car repaired easily without any fear. All of the covered stuff, you go in, and if it's part of the warranty, you don't have to worry about it at all. You can take it in to your favorite dealer, or you can go to the real dealer and make sure that, you know, you got a Toyota, it's getting the Toyota service and everything else, because you're not paying for it. So 800-CAR-6000, mention the promo code Beck. If you have a problem with your car, they have roadside assistance. They also have a rental car while yours is in the shop, and they pay them directly, so you don't have to wait for a check. It's carshield.com, promo code Beck. That's carshield.com, promo code Beck.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, so Chad Prather, I don't know if you know who Chad is. He is really good, really, really funny. He's a big blogger and podcaster, and he's part of The Blaze. And he asked me to be on his show, and here's a little snippet of the new podcast that is out today from Chad Prather. It's on kids and their devices.
I hate it when I see it with my kids. And I just, it makes me so sad when I see, especially when grandparents are at the table and the kids are on their devices. I mean, those stories, we didn't want to hear those stories either, most of them.
Yeah.
We were forced to sit there every Christmas and don't get up from the table, and you listen to the stories and the family's talking, we're having dinner, sit down. And you sat there and you listened to them. And you know them because you heard them over and over right. and over again. But that is part of the process.
Yeah.
And now, my wife's parents came down. They have the greatest stories. When I met her grandmother's mother was from Italy. And they're still the talk with your hands. Half of it is in Italian kind of family. Okay,
right.
when my wife first said to me, we were dating. She said, "You know what? Let's just come over, go over to my house or your house. Do you have stuff to make spaghetti?" And I said, "Oh yeah, sure." Came over. I'm on the phone, and she's in the kitchen, and she's reading this label of ragu. And puzzled, and she's holding a pan and the ragu. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I just opened this and put it in a pan, and that's it." And I'm like, "Yeah, that was the last time we ever had
right.
ragu or any kind of processed spaghetti sauce." So she's from that family. And I'm sitting with her grandmother one Christmas, and we're sitting at the table, and we're the last two to get up. And I said, "How did the family get over here?" And she said, "Well, I'll tell you the story of my mother." She said, my father was a very bad man. And I had kind of heard about this, that he had died early, but he was just a tyrant, a really bad guy. And she said, "My father was a really bad man." She said, "But my mother was just sweet." Now, this is Lena telling me this, and she's just this plump. She looks like one of those apple people, you know,
yeah.
who you put the clothes for eyes, yeah. and then they just kind of sink in, and they become this soft little face. She's just this angelic woman sitting there, and she says, "My mother knew that this man liked her. And had said for years, she's going to be my wife. And my mom and my mom's family wanted nothing to do with him because we knew what he was like."
Listen to the rest of this story. You can find it at wherever you get podcasts or on Blaze TV. It's the Chad Prather podcast. This week, it was just released with me as the guest. You have to hear the end of that story.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
This woman is from South Africa. She worked for Reuters over in South Africa, and then CBS News, and then ABC and NBC and CNN. She was, in 2002, she was on the battlefields all around the world as we were engaging in war. She was part of Face the Nation and the CBS Morning News. And then in 2006, she became the chief foreign correspondent for CBS News. And she held that job up until recently. But something has changed in her. And maybe it's just her freedom. She is able to say the things that nobody seems to be saying anywhere. Her name is Lara Logan. And she joins us in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. What does your dad want for Father's Day? And dads, what do you want, really? I mean, okay, yes, steak. Beyond that, I'm just looking for things I can do with my kids. I'm just looking for things that bring my family together and help me out. 23andMe has something I think is really cool. We did this a few months ago, and I'm telling you, the kids, they waited. Is it here yet? Is it here yet? Are the results here? Every day. And I'm talking teenagers. Is it here yet? And we sat down. My wife did one. I did one. And then we did one for my son, who's adopted. And we waited for those things to come in. And then we sat down for a couple of hours every night and went over them. It's the 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit. And right now you can get $50 off it through June 17th. It will show you how your genes influence your well-being and your lifestyle choices. It also will show you the insights on your genetics, on a whole bunch of, I mean, just amazing things, like even fear of heights and mosquito bites, etc. Then it gets important with the wellness reports to help dad make the decisions about his health, and the DNA, which shows you really where you're from. Yes, I am, what, 15 times more Native American than Elizabeth Warren. And I've never used it to get into a school or get a job.
That you tell us about.
That I tell you about. Right now, you can get $50 off for Father's Day, 23andMe, their health and ancestry kit at 23andme.com. That's the number 23andme.com. 23andme.com/Beck. Offer ends June 17. Journalist and a profile in Courage, Lara Logan, joins us now. Lara, nice to meet you and nice to have you on the program.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's get right into what you're doing recently, and then I'd like to kind of open it up to more broad on the media and what to expect and what we can do to change things. But you've been down on our border. And strangely, you have a different report than what the mainstream media is giving everyone.
Well, you know, to be honest, I don't watch what the mainstream media is giving everybody, especially when I'm working, right? Because my job is, well, I'm focused on doing my job.
Yeah.
I'm not too worried about what other people are doing. And a wise old correspondent told me many years ago that he, you know, every day he goes out and he does his best and he doesn't worry about his competition. And some days he's the best and some days he's not. So, but it's not surprising to me that it's different, because I know where I go, people all the time along the border in all different capacities keep saying, nobody is telling our story. Mm-hmm. Nobody is talking about this. Nobody's telling the truth. You know, it's not that people are lying about the border. It's not that it's just that there's more than one story. The only story is not simply a story of, you know, of poor people who want to move to the United States to improve their lives. That is one part of the story, and it's a very important part of the story. And I can honestly tell you, I've had moments where, you know, I've been climbing into my pretty crappy bed in my pretty crappy hotel at night, and I've just about wanted to cry thinking about the people who don't even know, you know, the people I've seen with their children and all the rest of it. I mean, I've got a big heart, and that breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. But it's only one part of the story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my job as a reporter has always been to understand the full context and cover as much of the story as I can. And that's all I'm trying to do.
So there are the sins of omission. And I think that's what people are committing by saying that this is the only part of the story. And you're right. I've been down at the border myself, and you know, we raised money to bring, you know, food and comfort down to some of the children that were there during the Obama administration. I tried to get the media to pay attention to the cages.
Oh, you're not allowed to talk about that, Ken.
I know. But it doesn't happen, and it shows this real bias, and I don't want to dwell on this.
I've got one word for you. I have actually spoken to people down there right across law enforcement and Border Patrol who actually talk about when in a certain point in the Obama administration, when they no longer wanted to deal with the deporter-in-chief title and the problem of all the children that they had in detention, basically in prison, that some people like to so-call that cages. What did they do? Actually, Border Patrol agents then had orders where they would have to intercept people who they found coming over the border in certain parts, and they would have to escort them back down to the border and send them back. Don't apprehend them. Don't create a statistic. Don't create a problem for us. Let's just push you over the border then and pretend that this is not happening. I can't say how widespread that was. I can't say that it was everywhere, but I can tell you that it did happen, and more than once.
So what is it that people are saying? Nobody's telling this story. What are the important stories that we're not hearing?
Well, first and foremost, what people just leave out of the narrative is that this is almost like a theater. It's a performance, not for the people who are living it, because they are like their pawns. It's a theater for the cartels. Yes, they make an enormous amount of money out of all the people that cross because they take most of the smuggling fees. They don't run the smuggling operations. They're way too smart for that. They have professional human smuggling operations, human trafficking organizations that are global who do the smuggling for them. But they pay an enormous amount of what they earn. They pay that to the cartels. The Mexican cartels decide who crosses, where they cross, when they cross. And so if you imagine you're a pilot and you can see the whole border from the air, that's really how the cartels operate. You know, it's divided up into the three main cartels now, the Sinaloa cartel, the Gulf cartel, and what used to be called the Zetas. That's now Cartel del Nostre. But those are the three main cartels that control the traffic. And the reason you have people coming in all these difficult places, one of the reasons, a big reason, is that the cartels know if they split the resources of Border Patrol, if you've got a group of 5 people or a group of 10 people and they all run in different directions, how many agents does it now take to stop them? You know, so that's exactly what they're doing. They're splitting the resources. Pilots have described to me, for example, in parts of the border, seeing groups of anywhere between 50 and 200 crossing at exactly the same time at the crossing points, sort of, you know, 100 yards from each other, right? So imagine in 5 different places separated by 100 yards, and you have hundreds of people. So what does that do? In one tiny little town on the border in Texas, on the Rio Grande Valley, they have Border Patrol facilities that are built to house a maximum of 116 people. Last weekend, they had over 1,100. Over 1,100 in one weekend, and they have people every single day. And that's just one weekend. This has been going on for months and months and months. So in these places where people get, people get told all the time, Texans, for example, Texans are a bunch of racist rednecks, right? And Texans don't care about people. Look, they don't recognize the children of illegal immigrants born in this country. Look at all the evil things people in Texas do. They put illegal immigrants under bridges in terrible weather to suffer. Well, literally, you've got Border Patrol agents looking at me with desperation saying, we don't know where else to put people. You've got churches in El Paso who the NGOs have run out of capacity, right? The NGOs that come from New York and other parts of the country that like to do interviews in the paper sometimes about everything they're doing down on the border, except they've run out of capacity. And it's the local people in many of these places who are trying to help in some ways. And the other, you know, there's another really important thing that gets left out of the narrative, which is that the large majority of Border Patrol agents are Hispanic Americans or Mexican Americans or whatever you want to call them. They're not, you know, it's not just these evil white men who are trying to stop people coming into this country. It's not that at all. In fact, it's much more complex. And in some of these towns, the vast majority of the people who live there are Hispanic American. And you know, Texas itself has a history that's very much wrapped up in Mexico. And the first president of Texas was Mexican. And when you look at the history here, these two people, I'm not painting a picture of Nirvana. There's always issues between people, but it's very different to what people say it is from a distance. It's the reality is not much like that at all. And I have yet to meet anyone who wants these people to suffer or who is deliberately cruel to people. And you know, my experience is limited to my experience. You know.
But I will tell you this. When you say these people are pawns, they are. They're being, I feel horrible for them, because if in some cases, not all cases, but in many cases, I think if I were on the other side of the border and I saw that America really didn't care about its borders and they were going to give away free citizenship and I could get my family there. And my family doesn't, we're living in a town that maybe has violence, but doesn't have any real chance for my kids. You damn right I'd be over here. I would absolutely do it, because I would think that America didn't really care and they were offering citizenship. So take that chance for my children to be able to have a better life. Those people are being preyed on by all these different groups that have all different agendas, including the drug cartels that are holding back some family members and saying, look, we're going to sell you this and we'll bring them over. You do us a favor. We'll do you a favor. And then we'll send your relative over. And I mean, we're importing people and enslaving people to some of these drug cartels.
Oh, no, we're doing the bidding of the drug cartels. Yes, whether wittingly or unwittingly, that's happening. And I can tell you, I can add to what you're saying, Glenn. How about if you were watching or listening to commercials on the radio, which tell you, go to America, you're going to get a house, you're going to get land, you're going to get a job, you're going to get this or that. And then add to that the fact that, you know, I mean, one of my most trusted, the person that I respect most in the world, my producer, Max McClellan, he went and did a story in a series of reports in Honduras. He was actually with a family when they said goodbye to their 15-year-old daughter and sent her to a better life in America. And you can imagine, right? I mean, he's a dad. He's got a daughter. I have two daughters and a son. I mean, what could be more heartbreaking than that? I mean, it's really painful for me to even imagine being in that situation. But they don't even know if their daughter is actually going to a real job in America.
There's so much sex trafficking. And you imagine sending your 15-year-old daughter into...
Nobody does that unless they are absolutely desperate or they have no other options, right? Nobody, nobody. I mean, the family, the mother was sobbing, the father was crying, the daughter was crying. You can imagine. That's a very painful thing. So, but her chance, she has a significant chance of being raped along the way.
Oh, yeah.
When people come from Latin America, they get to the first stash house inside of Mexico. People get raped at the stash houses. And then there's another stash house. You know, there's other stash houses all along the way, but right on the Mexican side, close to the border. And then more stash houses when you cross the border. And I've been looking at doing stories on this. We have reports of different people who get raped at every one of those locations along the way. And then, you know, but we're still trying to find someone who has been through that to talk about it, because these things are very difficult to cover.
Yes.
And also because, you know, it's very easy to tear these stories apart. This is, here, I have one for you. This is the only time in my career as a journalist, a professional, where I have looked at the statistics of rape and sexual abuse, right? Trying to figure out, okay, how prevalent is this? What exactly are the facts? What is the chance when you get on that journey that this is going to happen to you? How bad is it? Truly, right? And in this case, this is one case where the media, by and large, says, oh, you can't prove that this is happening. Oh, you know, yes, there was this MSF, Médecins Sans Frontières, the NGO, they did a big study on it, and they found that, you know, at least 30% of the women making this journey get raped or sexually assaulted. But what do you have many journalists turning around and saying then? Well, they took a sample of people on their way to the U.S. in Mexico. They didn't, you know, take everybody, and they didn't take everybody from every different country. And so you get 15 reasons why the MSF statistic is not representative. Well, you know, isn't the standard, the way we normally in the media treat rape and sexual assault figures, is we always say it's the most underreported crime, don't we? Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yep.
And it's just a small, it's a small irony that I noticed when I was researching this story. Yeah. I thought, wow, all my professional life, you know, wherever I've been, people have said that there's, you know, if that's the official figure, you can bet it's going to be much more than that.
Yes.
Now here you have people actually defending human traffickers, defending cartels, defending coyotes who rape people, and saying, well, you know, it's, we can't trust that figure because it's not fully representative.
So, Laura, I want to break for a minute, literally 1 minute, and then I want to come back and I want to ask you why? How is that happening, that intelligent people are taking sides of monsters and they don't see it that way? Back in 1 minute with Laura Logan. You can follow her at lauralogan.com, lauralogan.com. Sponsor this half hour is My Patriot Supply. Much of our nation's farmland remains underwater. Storms continue to rake the heartland, knocking out power repeatedly to millions. We have a farm. We have one crop in. We were lucky to get our crop in before the rain. Now, thank goodness, where our farm is, the sun has come out. But I don't know the other farmers, you know, in the area. A lot of them didn't get their crops in. They're going to miss one whole crop. You only have four a year if you're lucky. They've missed one. This is going to cause real problems, not just here, but all around the world. And this is happening around the world. PrepareWithGlenn.com will help you with any kind of problem. It doesn't have to be a big conspiracy theory. You know, they've got the FEMA is coming and body bag. Forget about that. Just the little things like running out of food because there's a snowstorm that is, you know, closed everything for 3 days. 1 week emergency food kit is totally reasonable, and it's 50% off when you go to preparewithglenn.com. 1 week emergency food, preparewithglenn.com. Preparewithglenn.com, because when breaking news is happening, it's too late to prepare. Do it now so you have that worry off your plate. 50% off right now, preparewithglenn.com. 10 seconds, station ID. The Glenn Beck Program, talking to Laura Logan, and Laura has just been down on the border, and you used the word irony a few minutes ago. That's the irony of it, and it feels wrong. That word might have been right maybe 10 years ago. Wow, how ironic. Now, it's beyond irony. I don't know how to describe it, but it is a real source of frustration and conflict, I think, with a lot of people, because you can't truly expect me to believe you're this stupid that you don't see you're defending people who are crazy on the other side. They're drug traffickers. They're human traffickers. You're hurting people by supporting this particular avenue. Why is this happening, and how do you look at this?
Well, you know, the thing is, I try as much as I talk about the things I know to also not guess and speculate about the things that to me are unknowable. I mean, you're a talk show host, right? So you can talk about those things. But in my world, I don't go on television and speculate, and which makes me a rare breed, I will say.
You're like two. You're like two.
But I'm old school, Glenn, and I think the really important thing for me that I want people to understand is I didn't invent the model of what it is to be an honest, independent journalist. I don't own it. I'm not the mm-hmm. only one. Mm-hmm. What I am disappointed by is to see, to see the lack of critical thought and the lack of independence and the lack of honesty in so much of what is reported out there today. What I can tell you in terms of why would people do this right now? Well, I mean, what I know as a fact is that when I look out there I have looked at all the reporting, it's the same story over and over and over again. And it's a very, like I said, it's an important story, but it's still the same story. There's many other aspects of this that are not being covered. If I can go down to the border and border patrol agents and churches and other people can tell me that they have to give young girls who they help, they have to give them codes so that when they get to where the human smugglers are taking them or where they're being sent by the traffickers, that they can call in and use this code and people will know that they are in trouble, that they're being trafficked, that they're being sexually exploited, that they're being... You know, they're being badly treated.
Hold on just a second. More with Lara Logan when we come back.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
If you have a lot of pain in your life, I understand. I've got Stu to live with. And unfortunately, Relief Factor doesn't take him away. I've tried throwing it at him. everything. It just doesn't make it go away.
It hurts me, but right. It doesn't really make me go away.
But you take Relief Factor and it'll make that hurt go away. Stu.
That's true. And the inflammation from my boss pelting me with things, that's something that Relief Factor might help with.
It might, because it reduces inflammation, and that is really the main source of our pain. When things are inflamed inside of us, that's where pain comes from.
We got to get Relief Factor to Amy Klobuchar's staff.
This
would be very helpful. I think we should send
very
them a bag.
Yeah. So it's Relief Factor. I know there's tons of people in this audience, veterans and everybody else, that you suffer with daily pain and you might have tried everything else. Please try this. Try it for 3 weeks. If it doesn't work, stop taking it. It's $20 to try it. 70% of the people who try it go on to order more and more. I've been taking it for about a year and a half, and it actually really, really makes a difference. It's Relief Factor. Go to relieffactor.com. Call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Relieffactor.com. Get your life back. Lara Logan is an investigative journalist. She is working... with Cheryl Atkinson's group for the next 3 months, just covering the border and what's really going on in the border. She's with us now to talk about different things. And Laura, first, again, thank you for coming on the program. I'm a big fan of yours, and have a great deal of respect for you on multiple levels. The thing that you said a minute ago, you said. Glenn, you're a radio guy. You're a talk radio guy, so you can comment on these things. I'm a journalist, and there's a difference. That's one of the biggest problems with the media right now. Is I've never claimed to be a journalist. I don't. That's not what I do. I try to be fair, but I'm an opinion guy, and so yeah. I look at things, and then people come to me for what do you think it means. That's different than a journalist, and the journalists keep confusing that. Now, with that said, I do want to ask your opinion, because I think you might have an interesting mm-hmm. perspective. You're from South Africa. I'm sure you remember, apartheid and on all of those.
Absolutely do, yeah.
Okay. And maybe it's just my naive, American viewpoint, but I've never seen America like this before. I don't remember the 1960s, but I've never seen America like this before. And we are dividing ourselves into little teeny camps, and it feels like we are headed for real trouble. Do you see anything that, from your South African background, that we Americans might be missing on, like, hey, don't do this?
Well, the first thing that I would say, Glenn, is, I live in a small town in Texas, and I travel all over this country, and I go to a lot of different places, sometimes big cities in California, sometimes small towns in California, and from California to Oklahoma to Seattle, Washington, to anywhere. And I'm not so sure that we really are that divided. I look to the media and I look to the politicians and I look to the propagandists for pushing this narrative over and over and over again. And, you know, there's something that I've seen happen all over the world. Look at Syria, for example. When Assad first started slaughtering his own people, he said he was fighting terrorists. Today, and for a long time now, he has been fighting terrorists, right? Because they were smart enough. They knew what would happen when they did what they did. They knew that there are terrorist groups right in that region and within their own country who would rise up and exploit that situation. And they now he's telling the truth, except it's not the whole truth. And I feel that way about where we are. This is my personal opinion. This is not my observations. It's as a journalist, it's my observations. As a professional and as a thinking person who is able to, part of my job is to separate from the emotion mm-hmm. and the ideology. I have to break things down, right? When I look at things, what are the facts? What do we know for a fact? What do I know for a fact? How do I begin to understand what has happened or here so that I can begin to put my name to this and tell people this is what I believe happened. This is what I know happened because I've been able to independently verify it from firsthand sources, right? So that's why, for example, when the BuzzFeed dossier, you know, the Steele dossier came out, mm-hmm. well, that was a joke to me from the very beginning because as a journalist, it doesn't have any firsthand sources, number one. Number two, the sources it does have, which are second and third hand, who are FSB agents working for the Russian government at the time, which is just a joke, okay? So not that the FSB, you know, or that intelligence agencies can't have information, they can, but you evaluate that in its context, right? And anyway, I could go down the list, but that's not an ideological statement for me, and it's not a political statement. Correct. It is to a lot of other people, but not, you know, for me, I break it down. So in South Africa, you know, there's two big things that I can tell you about. I grew up despising racism. I saw people put to death for the color of their skin. And so I was forced to confront these issues very early on. And I don't believe in the death penalty because for me personally, the idea that you could put someone to death for the wrong reasons overwhelms all the considerations when someone deserves to die, right? And of course, the counter argument instantly is, well, what if your daughter or your son or someone you loved was raped and tortured and murdered? Wouldn't you want them to die? Well, of course I would. But you know what I learned? That when you believe in a principle, you have to make personal sacrifices for those principles. They're not free. As many people in this country know far better than me, freedom isn't free. And true tolerance, so in South Africa, you know, I really didn't have anything in common with or identify with the extreme right. I didn't identify with racism in any way. In fact, my entire life was defined by the stand that I took for equality and freedom and justice for all. You know, that the example that was set by the ANC and Nelson Mandela and all of the many leaders in South Africa that stood up for that, black and white, by the way. So what I learned as a young journalist was I didn't get to say when there was an attack or a big event, I'm not going to go and talk to those evil right-wing people who I despise, because my job is to say to them, hey, why did this happen? What did you do? And I still have to put their perspective forward. It also doesn't mean as a journalist that when they said truly crazy lunatic things, when people on all sides said that to me, I didn't just put it out. Because I could put, you know, because I could CYA, right? I could cover my butt and I could say, well, this person said it, right? No, you actually had to evaluate those things in the context and you had to see whether there was anything credible in that person saying them. And if they were truly representative of whoever it was you were saying in your story, they represent it. And so there are subjective judgments in what we do all of the time as journalists, every single minute of the day. And I've never shied away from that because I'm one of the few journalists who stood up and said, you know, objectivity is not a human quality. Subjectivity is our most human quality. To be objective, we need systems and processes and we need things that we revert to that take us out of our most human instincts and force us to do things that are not really natural for human beings. It's natural for us to have opinions. It's not natural for us to look at things from all different sides. It's natural for us to agree with the people we like. It's not natural for us to be as critical of the people we agree with as the ones we disagree with. So in a sense, objectivity is something that takes us outside of our nature, but it's not something that's completely beyond reach. and tolerance and being liberal and being open-minded and having an open heart, those things don't belong to any political force, in my view. I just believe that if you're going to say that you are something, you have to be that thing. You have to stand up for that thing. Otherwise, it's meaningless. Otherwise, they're just words. They're bumper stickers. There are a lot of bumper stickers out there today about being open and being tolerant and about being better people. And we're boxing people into a very narrow space where we define what people should think. Someone else defines what we should think, what we should believe in, how we should behave, and who we should associate with. And in every realm, how we should do those things. And I got to tell you, I was born free. Freedom lives within me. And there's the greatest example in my life that I've ever seen of this, and there are many examples, but the one that I was close to personally was Nelson Mandela. And when he stood on trial at the Rivonia trial, he was charged with terrorism, and the South African government, was at its most powerful. And his family and friends begged him not to say what he had, the speech he had written for when he got to take the stand. And he went ahead and did it anyway. And in that speech, one of the things that he said is that freedom is an ideal for which I would like to live, but it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die. And that is the price he was willing to pay for the principle that he believed in. In fact, he was offered his freedom many times in the 27 years he was in prison, and he never took it because the compromise wasn't worth it. The compromise meant that the principle didn't stand. And what greater example can you ever have than a person who gave up their own personal freedom to live behind bars for as long as he did, because he understood that the principle had to be intact. And so what I say to people today is I haven't changed. Yes, things about me have changed, but I don't change the way I do my job. I don't change the way I live my life. I live it with 150% and do it to the best of my ability. And I go with an open mind and an open heart. I don't pretend. I don't have prejudices or biases or feelings or emotions. I just try to put them in the right places and do my job the way every great journalist and every good journalist out there, every independent, honest journalist tries to do it. It's not unique to me.
Oh, this is why I just love you so much. That is, I don't know what else you can say. I'm going to leave it there. I would love to have you for a podcast and be able to spend good, uninterrupted time with you, because people have to hear your words. And I mean, this is what exactly should be taught in journalism schools and should be said on the floor of every newsroom in America. That what you just said should be played for everyone, and they should all just nod their head and go, yep, that's true. Because that's the way it is, and that has no party or partisan politics in it. And I really respect you, Laura. Really respect you.
No, and I do my job no matter who's in power. And I just want to say to you, thank you, by the way, for supporting me and for standing up for me. And you have some great people listening to your show. One of them right now is very close to me, and he was a pilot in Vietnam, and he's one of the best people that I've ever known in my life. And you have a lot of people that listen to you all the time and have talked to me about coming to do your show and want me to do your podcast, and I said I would, and I always keep my word.
Good.
So I'm going to do that. I promise.
Laura, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. God bless. You can follow Laura Logan at lauralogan.com. She's also for doing a 3-month expose on the border. You can find that at Sinclair Broadcasting. Laura Logan. So what we need to do is we need to understand where we came from. What are the principles? She was talking about principles. What are the principles that we held up and said, this is worth living for, this is worth dying for? We're going to take a cruise next year, and we're going to mix a lot of fun and vacation time with some real learning. So we're going to go to Venice Venice is the place really that financed the Renaissance. And what did the Renaissance do? Reason, the Age of Reason came out of that. We're also going to go to Athens and talk a little bit about democracy and a republic. What is the difference between a straight-up democracy and a republic? We're going to go to the land of the prophets and Jesus, and we're going to talk about faith and its principles. And we're going to eat a lot.
Yes, a lot.
A lot.
We may sink the ship.
Right.
We may eat so much. It goes underwater.
Daniel Barton, Rabbi Lappin, Stu will be there. I will be
or
there.
Or David Barton. Daniel Barton will be there, too. And he's a great guy. But David Barton will be there as well.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin, Stu will be there.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Once you get your fill of all the really smart stuff from Daniel Lappin and David Barton, then you come find me and we have fun.
That's right.
That's my role on this.
He's kind of the Julie of the old Love Boat series.
I'll take that.
I don't know. Would I be Isaac? Because, I could make a good drink, and I don't drink, but I could make a good drink. Anyway, Bill O'Reilly is also going to be making an appearance. The tickets are going really rapidly. Get this, is for spring of next year, spring 2020. You're going to need a break around that time. So join us. Cruise through history. Go to comesailaway.com for all the details right now and get your tickets to comesailaway.com. Go there now. That we were going to draw a name for if people bought tickets to go to the museum yesterday, that we would draw a name, and we got it in a Big Abe Lincoln hat, and the winner of the personal guided tour by me is from California. Janice Roca is the name. Janice, obviously listening to us in California yesterday, and bought some tickets, and now is going to get the personal guided tickets. It was Janice has five people coming with her, so it's gonna be fun. And just get a nap in, because I tend to be a little long-winded, just a little bit, on the museum. And this is going to be a great museum. We were working on it last night. Some of the things that you've never seen, you know, when you think of museum, sometimes you think of old crap. But this is some old crap, and I hate to use the word crap, seeing that, you know, some of it is belonged to Abraham Lincoln. But there's also a lot of new things. We're using the experience of the American story of slavery to show you that, A, it was global. Did you know that only 4% of the slaves that were shipped across the Atlantic came to America? Only 4%. 50% of those slaves went to Brazil. I didn't know that. Did you know that Mexico stopped slavery just a few years before we did? They were actually number two. It was Britain number one, then Mexico, and then we were number three. Except Mexico, it deserves a little asterisk. Mexico decided to end slavery, and when they passed the bill to end slavery, it was, okay, but you can keep your slaves for 99 more years. And nobody talks about slavery to Mexico. Nobody talks about the slavery in Brazil. But the important thing is that it is happening still today. And we have some pieces from ISIS that will... you'll never forget. This is a great, great museum that we've put together. It is 77 years ago, based on the Gettysburg Address. 77 years ago. How are we doing on that promise that all men are created equal? You can see this at the Mercury Studios, the end of the last week of June into July,
You're
early
listening
July.
To Glenn Beck. The fusion of entertainment. Enlightenment.
Well, the good news is we're eating the hot dog at both ends when it comes to life. You know what? That baby's not a baby until I say it's a baby. And life on the other end, it's not really a life if it's not worth living. Now, a bill legalizing assisted suicide reaches the governor's desk in Maine. Where is this all headed? Well, we could be more like Sweden and Denmark and the Netherlands. They're fantastic. Are they? Let me tell you the story of the teenager that was just euthanized. See if you agree with their decision to be tolerant and help people out that are in pain. In 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, so I'm just going to take a quick poll of dads. How many would like your family around the table with big, juicy, yummy steaks? Raise your hands. Okay, except for Stu and people who don't like their family. Everybody, let me just say, how many just like to sit around the table with big, juicy steaks? Okay, that's everybody but Stu. Omaha Steaks for Father's Day. They right now at Omaha Steaks have a great special going on. It's a $235 value. You get fillets, top sirloins, pork chops. You get 8 steak burgers. You get jumbo franks, chicken fried steaks, all beef meatballs, 4 premium chicken breasts. You have dessert, the Omaha seasoning, signature seasoning, a jar of that stuff. You get all of this $235 value for $59.99. It's an Omaha steak. What? Really? For $59.99. That's 74% off just for Father's Day. Now, this ends, I think it is July 17th. But you just go to omahasteaks.com and you type in Beck into the search bar and you look for my special. Just look for Beck, type it in the search bar. It will take you to the page that has this special, $235 worth of meat for $59.99. This is such a great Father's Day gift. Only from Omaha Steaks, America's original butcher. It's the Father's Day Steak Fix Package. It's $59.99 at omahasteaks.com. Put Beck in the search bar for the special. Did you see how crazy Miley Cyrus was?
She's hilarious.
She's so funny. I remember the interview I did with her dad when she first went to Disney.
I do remember this. Yeah. Billy Ray, yeah.
Yeah, and Billy Ray was on, and I said, Billy, aren't you afraid your daughter is going to be with the devil soon? And he was like, no, because I'm going to be there with her. And I know, because I've seen all these kids that go to Disney, they all turn out screwed up and leftist and drug addicts and everything else. Not my sweetie pie.
God, we got to find that interview. I do remember that general conversation happening. Because
he was a concerned dad. She was a good Christian. They were a good Christian family. Everything was going well. And then she went over to Disney. And we had a great conversation, and he was like, no, I am well aware of it. That's why I'm going to be with her all the time. We're not breaking up our family. We're going to be there. Most of these kids go, and then they, oof.
Yeah, it's been a rough run here for Miley. It's amazing she's actually theoretically still culturally relevant. I mean, it's...
Right?
Like, when I saw her face, I was like, is she still doing things?
I did the same thing, and I'm like, oh, there's the tongue again. It's Miley Cyrus.
Right. So she licks this cake in a photo, and it says abortion is healthcare on it, and it's, everyone, it's about the level of analysis most people put into this particular topic. They like a photo on Instagram. Like, there's not a lot of thought going on here.
I just need to know what to put on my cake that I'm going to lick later today.
Probably buttercream would be my guess. It's certainly right, the way you normally
exactly.
go.
No, I mean, what should it say? I mean,
we should take some suggestions. Maybe we'll get one.
I liked yours. What you put on your response?
It's a picture of her licking the cake. So the icing says this cake now has a venereal disease,
right?
Which is unfortunate.
It's sad.
That's not
it's wrong.
Right. That's
it's
not
wrong.
Right.
Wrong.
I'm amazed by this and that. Like, abortion is a lot of things. It used to be something that everyone in society recognized either as evil or a necessary evil, right? The pro-choice side said it was a necessary evil. There's some places, we want it to be safe, legal, and rare. Well, why do you want it to be rare? Why rare? Why would you want it rare? If it seems like, if it's not negative, why would you want it rare? And of course, the answer to that is there are a lot of people who consider themselves pro-choice who want it rare. But the people who are designing slogans like safe, legal, and rare say, screw rare, You know, legal is the main thing. Whether it's safe or not is not really a concern either.
Right. It's not.
So it's been an interesting development in this kind of world that's gone to now saying either shout your abortion. It was, where did I have my best abortion? It was in Jamaica at, you know, at a resort.
By the way, if you don't know, he's not making that up. A lady gave a speech about where her best abortion was. And she was giving
Seattle,
it to
right?
a crowd. Yeah. And she said it was right. It happened right here in Seattle. And it was the best abortion. It was my first. And it was my best.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What a psycho.
So you have that. And then the other idea that somehow it's healthcare. Abortion is a lot of things. One thing it is not is healthcare.
No.
Healthcare can't be, hey, I want you to die. Like, you can't make so, ending a life into healthcare. Now, especially when the person is not even there to agree to it. Right. Like, the person has no opinion. It's one thing to say euthanasia. OK, well, I mean, is what Dr. Kevorkian did healthcare? I mean, I don't think so. But at least he's a doctor and it's a medical sort of procedure. So maybe you make that argument. But at least those people were agreeing to it.
The person is making the own choice. I am not for euthanasia. I think it's a bad, bad standard to set. However, at the same time, I am conflicted. I just don't want the government and the medical community having to sign off on everything, because then it just becomes part of the system. And I don't like that. I think you have a right to kill yourself. Now, I come from a family with two suicides. Suicide is destructive. It is awful. It destroys a family. It harms the chi. It is the most selfish and destructive thing you can do. And I know because it's happened twice. And it affects everyone around you. With that being said, do you have the right to your own life? I think you do.
It's going to be really hard to stop people. It's one of those things that you can make a law against it if you want. But
well, it's like the big Trump baby in Europe, in England. Did you hear what happened to it yesterday?
Did it get popped?
It got popped. Yeah. Somebody shivved it. Somebody took a knife and cut a hole in it. Well, I thought you outlawed knives in Great Britain. How did that happen? But what's happening now is we are devaluing things so much because it's just the starting point, safe, rare, and legal, right? We want it to be rare. Well, it's in the Netherlands, they passed a law a few years ago where you could have euthanasia, and it was supposed to be safe, rare, and legal. And it was just for people who had absolutely no prospect of getting better. So you're at the end of your life, you've got cancer, and you're in massive pain. Just please, just help me die. Please help me die. Now, I can understand that. I really can. I hope I don't get there, but I've been close to that kind of pain before where I'm like, I can't live like this. I can't live like this anymore. So I understand it. However, what's happened now is you used to have a psychiatrist also sign off. So you had to have two doctors and one psychiatrist, I think. And so the doctors both had to say, yep, terminal and blah, blah, blah. And the psychiatrist had to say, yeah, they're in their right mind. Okay. I think that's probably a pretty good standard. Well, they're getting rid of the psychiatrist now because the psychiatrist is pointing out, no, this person is just really depressed. So they're getting rid of the psychiatrist. So he doesn't have to sign on anymore. And they're starting to get rid of people. For instance, they just got rid of a, I think he was a 20-some-year-old guy who was mentally handicapped. And, he said he didn't have a life and he was never going to have a good life. And so he wanted to kill himself. And so they killed him. Now, here's the latest. A teenager who was raped by two men when she was 14 said that, and she also has anorexia, and she has all kinds of problems. I mean, it's clear this girl has gone through really horrific things, okay? She's 17 years old. She said the pain she was dealing with after the childhood rape was insufferable, and she couldn't live this way.
And so she decided that she wanted to be euthanized, and they did it. A 17-year-old girl who had been raped and had tragic things happening to her. She had anorexia, which is a sign of a mental issue. She said it was too much. She couldn't deal with it. Please kill me. And they did. What the hell is wrong with us? I mean, as a human being, something's wrong with us when we don't see the potential for that life. And we don't say, no. First of all, there have been people that have gotten through a lot more than you have.
And the parents were on board with this, weren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine?
No.
Look, it's a tough situation in certain circumstances. I understand that. But the problem here is like it would be unthinkable to an American parent right now to go to them and say, hey, your kid's in a lot of pain. They're really suffering. Do you want them dead? Right. And of course, everyone would say no. The issue in these other countries, after a certain amount of time, there's no more stigma. Right. Like they just like, oh, well, I guess. Yeah. I mean, if she's saying she wants to be dead and it's legal and just go with it. That's the same thing that happens with abortion. Right. I mean, people, you know, a lot of people who would normally not consider such a thing don't go down the road of really thinking it out because the government has made the decision for them. It's illegal. It's a legal thing. And it's the same thing. The same thing happened with slavery. There are tons of people who are not, you know, some of the founders, right? Like what was David Barton saying yesterday? We were doing a thing on slavery coming up for a future show. And he was saying that I think about a quarter of people in that founding era believed the horrible things that you'd believe about slavery, you know, that
they're not really people.
It was good for them. They lived terribly in Africa. It's better here. All the things that, you know, you would associate with a racist opinion about slavery from the founding era. About a quarter of the founders believe that. You know, I think if you went to the average person in America, there's not the sort of thought put into that in the 1700s as to like the whether slavery should be legal or not. Every day they had been alive, people had been slaves. African Americans were treated as second class citizens or 15th class citizens the entire time. It was like this all over the world. And unless your job is to sit down and rethink these things and challenge those sort of long held viewpoints, you never get to a point where you even consider. Mm-mm. I would say a good portion, 75%, I bet, of people who consider themselves pro-choice have put such little thought into it that
they couldn't defend it.
Right. Like they wouldn't be able to defend it. And believe me, every conversation I have with someone who is pro-choice can't defend it. You can't get there because there isn't a defense to it. With the exception of, you know, some people who really have like philosophically thought about this for a long time. There's some that really know those arguments and fall on a side that I don't really truly understand. But the average person isn't there at all. They see that it's legal. They see that what they get from people like Miley Cyrus is evil men are telling you what to do, and that's not right. So give money to these people. The nice people think killing your baby is okay. The mean people think it's not. Therefore, go with the nice people, the cool people. That's how, generally speaking, people view this. And they always say this thing about how, you know, who can't have an opinion on abortion are men, right? This is a women's health issue. And of course, as a man, I find that can be completely offensive. Certainly plenty of women vote on things that only affect men and they have opinions on it. And they should. You're an American citizen. We have a First Amendment. You should have an opinion on whatever you want. The funny thing about this, though, in poll after poll after poll, women are more opposed to abortion than men are. This makes plenty of sense because it's men who are able to get out of the responsibility, right? Like men don't want to think about yourself as a 22-year-old schlub and you just knocked up some girl you barely know. And she's like, I don't know, maybe I'll have an abortion. If you don't have a moral obligation to say, no, please have the baby, what are you going to say? Go ahead. I'll drive you to the clinic. I'll pay for the thing. Right. Like if you have no moral qualms with it, of course, as a guy, you're going to be getting out of this, you know, this
responsibility for the rest of your life.
You're going to avoid the punishment of a baby, to put it frankly. So, of course, guys are going to be more. Yeah. You know, abortion sounds pretty wonderful. You're the one. You don't have to go through the procedure. You get out of the punishment from a baby. And women, who are the only ones who are supposed to have opinions on this, are actually more against abortion than men are. So the long thing, the end of this is, turning this into a cultural issue is one of the most brilliant strategies of all time. Yep. It's not culture. Slavery wasn't culture. Slavery was not a cultural issue. It wasn't about, like, well, the rights of the slave owner. I mean, that was a horrific moral failure. And so is this. And the fact that Miley Cyrus, who I would also describe as a horrific moral failure, is on that side of the argument should not be surprising.
Well, yeah, but she was licking a cake. Did you see that?
It
was
really good.
It looked really good. I thought I'd put on my cake. Skanks shouldn't lick my cake. But that's probably wrong.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, all right, let me tell you about American.
Probably.
You could tweet what should be on my cake today. So anyway, June could see mortgage interest rates dropping to the lowest it's been since 2018. It's crazy what's happening. American Financing. Call them today and get pre-qualified for a home loan. It takes a 10-minute call to get started. Now, you can afford to own your own home if you call American Financing and ask them about the down payment assistance programs that can get you into a home for very little down. American Financing works for you, not the bank. They are going to look at your financial situation, and they should counsel you, and you should listen when they say, you know, this is going to put you, I mean, if you have a bump in the road, this is going to put you in a hard spot. Don't do anything stupid. In fact, do the opposite. Get a loan, get it with low interest rates, lock those low interest rates, and do it with American Financing. They don't take commission on the loans, so they work for you. Take advantage of these historically low rates now at American Financing at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. AmericanFinancing.net. We break for 10 seconds. Station ID.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
So I just have to say, because we're on talk radio and this is a market, I just brought in my new gun. I got a new gun, and I have been looking for a handgun that I love. And I've been carrying SIGs for a long time, and it was the first gun I got. And so I'm a better shot with a SIG than anything else. But I like Glocks, and I, you know, but I'm just a better shot with a SIG. So I always carry SIG. Well, SIG has just come out with their new, what is it, the P320. Oh my gosh, this is the greatest handgun I've ever owned. It's a weapon of war. Yes, Elizabeth Warren is crying herself to sleep right now. This thing is so great. The military is now using it. It's 21 rounds. 21 rounds in a handgun. And it is so good. I have a big hand. And this actually fits my hand. Everything I've ever had, especially with SIG and Glock and everybody else, my last finger comes off of it because it's not long enough. This is just the greatest gun. Out of 21 shots, 20 of them right on the bullseye. It is super accurate, super easy to use. I love it. If you're looking for a new handgun, they're not paying me to say this. And I wouldn't tell you if I didn't believe it anyway. I just got this and I love it. I absolutely love it. It's the P320. What is it? The X5, it says here, I guess. But it's really, really great.
You know what that looks like to me? A weapon of war designed to kill. That's what it looks like.
Well,
to
that's
me.
What all guns are for. Yeah.
Yes.
To kill.
Thank you.
That's what they're all.
Thank you for admitting it finally, you right-wing extremist.
No, that's what. Did you hear Obama, what he said on stage?
Oh, we have to cover that. Do we have
do we have time to play this real quick? Play. Here's Obama.
And some of you may be aware our gun laws in the United States don't make much sense. Anybody can buy any weapon anytime.
Nope. Not true. The crowd seemed to love that idea.
without much, if any, regulation. They can buy it over the internet. They can buy machine guns.
Machine guns without any or much regulation. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. In fact, I just tried to buy this pistol. I happened to be in a store in Utah. I was on my way to Idaho, and I have a Texas license. So I had to go. It took me 3 days to get this gun. That sounds like a kind of a problem. Kind of sounds like that was a little bit of a hassle. It sounds like there's some regulation there and some loopholes. I couldn't just walk in and buy any gun. If that's what it is for a handgun, how difficult is it for a machine gun?
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
Oh, the lies on the guns thing. All right. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. People are voting with their feet right now. People are moving. Do you know we're getting 600 people in the Dallas area a week moving into the Dallas Metroplex? This place is getting gigantic. It is so huge now. Please leave all your crap and your voting practices behind. Please, please, please. Anyway, realestateagentsitrust.com. It's really hard to find a house, especially if you're moving into a new area. If you're moving into a new area, you got to find the right schools. You want to be in the right neighborhoods, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if you have a real estate agent, you know, that's the luck of the draw. You don't know who they are. Realestateagentsitrust.com are all hand vetted by my team. They all have listened to the show. They're fans of the show. They have your same kind of sensibilities. And so when you're going into a new town, you know, you don't have to worry about, does this guy really hate Donald Trump? Am I going to have to listen to that? Or is this woman going to just talk to me about liberal stuff all the time? No, they think like you, and you can trust them to find the right house for you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. That's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. So I don't know if you've seen Netflix, their series, Our Planet. It's documentary, and it's David Attenborough, blah, blah, blah. And everybody thinks, oh, it's beautiful, and it's got all kinds of great information in it. Oh, my gosh, these walruses are committing suicide. There is a researcher, a zoologist with 35 years of experience, especially on Arctic animals. She said, no, this is just Netflix and their tragedy porn, the climate hoax. I don't know if you can put your kids in front of Our Planet and just say, oh, yeah, watch this. It's great, because it's full of nonsense. And they're saying these walruses are, you know, falling to their death because they're starving to death and there's no ice. And it's very sad. It's awful to watch. But she said that's not what's happening. And Susan is with us now. Hello, Susan. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thanks. Good morning.
So tell me about the walruses that are, I mean, just plunging to their death because there's no ice.
Well, in fact, the haulouts of walrus, these are mostly mothers with their calves on these Arctic beaches. They're really natural events that are not caused by lack of sea ice. They've always happened. And the herds come onto the shore in large numbers because the walruses are more abundant now than they were even 50 years ago.
Okay, so they have, they're like a boom and bust society, aren't they? When
yes.
They
yes.
And, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that they have a tendency to, the population builds higher and higher, they outstrip their food supply. And then animals starve and the population goes down until the food supply can rebuild. And mostly they're eating clams and things like that that live on the bottom of the ocean.
So what is this haul out? What does that mean, the haul out?
Well, walruses are herd animals. They really like to stick together. And in fact, they really prefer to be tightly packed. And so they group together. The haulout just means grouping together. And so when there's sea ice available, they will haul out on the ice in fairly large groups. And at other times, they will haul out on beaches. But they don't. They have been hauling out on beaches since the 1800s. There's been records going back of those haulouts, both on the coast of Russia near the Bering Sea and also on the coast of Alaska. So this is a behavior that's quite natural for them, and it really isn't sea ice dependent. It's something that happens in the late summer and fall on a fairly regular basis.
And so they've been doing this since we've started noticing them and recording them. And they go up onto the beach or onto the rocks, and they're all tightly packed in. And is it just kind of like a whole bunch of, you know, puppies on a bed, and, you know, somebody moves and another person moves and one of the puppies would fall off the bed? I mean, they're not committing suicide, and they're just so packed tightly that, is that what's happening?
Exactly. And the other thing is that they're also quite easily spooked at that point in time, because these are mostly mothers with their calves. They're very protective. And if one of the animals at the back of the pack, sort of on the beach side, gets frightened and starts heading for the water, because that's their natural instinct when they're frightened, then they sort of push the herd ahead of them. And in fact, hundreds of animals can be trampled even along a flat beach. But if they've managed to get themselves up onto a high cliff, then there's no alternative but to fall over the edge. And it's not only certain that that's what happened in the Netflix video, but we know from reports that were issued in the newspaper that there was polar bears had actually spooked walruses off the same cliff that was filmed in that video 2 days before it was filmed.
So wait a minute. Because in that film, it shows all these walruses down at the bottom of the pile of rocks. And you think, oh, my gosh, they're just all dying. And I wish there was just an ice slope there to just gently push them back in the water. But you're saying not only is it normal and natural for them to go up on the rocks and then have no place to go but over the cliff, but you're saying that that big pile was also partly caused by polar bears and them up at the top of the cliff going, oh crap, and backing up over the cliff?
Yes, absolutely.
And
because we know that there was this incident that was initiated by polar bears that happened just 2 days before, we know that most of those animals that were filmed, the carcasses laying along the beach, almost certainly happened from the polar bear spooked incident. And what we think happened was that there were members from World Wildlife Foundation, or the WWF, who were on site at the time, and part of the whole Netflix team called the film crew in to come and film the walruses up on the cliff.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was really a whole contrived setup. And in looking at what was happening, we know that there were still polar bears in the area. I've seen the film. In fact, the closing shot shows a polar bear coming out of the water onto the beach to feed on the walruses, the dead walruses. But when you're looking at how the whole footage was shot, there's a cameraman positioned just about at the place where the walruses could have come safely down from the cliff, but that way was blocked. And if there were still polar bears in the area, they could have been coming up from on the backside of the cliff, or at least the walruses could have smelled them. Even that would have set them off. What we also know is that some of the shots in the film had to have been taken with a drone. Now, even a drone flying overhead could also have spooked them. So we've got a situation where the filmmakers themselves,
this is unbelievable,
could have been complicit in generating at least the walruses that they filmed. And then they attributed all of that to a lack of sea ice, blamed on climate change.
So how much of these series, because my son watches them, my daughter watches them, I've watched them, and there's times when I've rolled my eyes and gone, okay, but I didn't know all this about the walruses. How much of these things can we even sit down and let our kids watch and trust that it's true.
Well, I think really what the only thing that you can do is let your kids watch it. I mean, it's beautiful photography.
It's beautiful.
There's no doubt that it actually is. You know, parts of it are true. I mean, the haul-outs are true. But you have to take the commentary with a grain of salt. But you also have to be prepared ahead of time to talk to your kids about the fact that everything that is said there might not be true. And hey, maybe we should follow up and look into this. And they've said that this is why this happened. Let's go and look up to see, you know, what the background information is on that. And I think that if parents are prepared to follow up with their kids and to look into that, it makes it a learning experience.
Susan, I got to tell you, they don't have access to a zoologist like you, like I do. And you go online, I'm sure WWF and all of these global warming institutions have rushed to put things out that say it is true. I mean, how do you know what's true? How do you know what a trusted source is on actual science anymore?
No, well, that is true, for sure. But what you can do, I mean, it's one of the reasons that I've been blogging about polar bears since 2012, and that's to actually make sure that the information is up there for people to find on the internet. Now, people might say, well, how do I trust you? However, what I do is make sure that I list the sources where I get my information from so that people can follow it up. But at the very least, when there's information like that available, you can say, oh, okay, well, there's two sides to this story. This person's saying this person's saying that. Then maybe I have to leave that any interpretation up in the air. And just say that none of it can be trusted. And that's really an awful place for science to be in.
Hmm. Okay, Susan, thank you so much for being on with us. We really appreciate your time. Her name is Susan Crockford. She is a zoologist and author of the book, The Polar Bear Catastrophe That Never Happened. You can read her article, Netflix is Lying About Those Falling Walruses, at the Financial Post. And her website is polarbearscience.com. That's polarbearscience.com. Crazy. Just crazy. So did you see yesterday the Fed, because everybody's freaking out about the trade war with China and now Mexico next week. Mm-hmm. Did you see that the Fed actually has reversed itself and said it looks like it's going to start maybe dropping rates?
Yeah, that's not
a good sign.
Admitting weakness in the economy, right?
Yeah, that's not a good sign. And you drop the rates and, you know, that's just going to produce more cash out there, more debt. That's not a good thing. May I suggest that you call Goldline? We are coming to a place where everything's about to change. And I don't know how long it's going to change and how long it's going to take, but it's about to change. And the financial situation, if we got to pray for the president and his team that they do the right things and they keep their eye on the ball on this. But eventually this house of cards has to come down and we'll go through a recession or something. And it's just the way it is. Goldline would like to remind you that these things are cyclical and there are things that you can do. There's a reason why gold is having the month that it's been having. It's having a very good month because people start to say, wait a minute, I don't think this is all so sound. Right now, Goldline is offering a four-coin collection from 1881. It's the $5 Liberty coins from the U.S. This was, you know, these were done in 1881, but, in the middle of the 1800s, this is what most people had for cash. This would be like a $5 bill. These are not worth $5 anymore because we've inflated our money. Gold is... not, you know, it It just remains the same. And what you could buy with one of these pieces for $5 back in 1881 is about what you could get for it now and buy that same kind of article for the equivalent of 1881 $5 bill. These coins were the ones that made it through the Depression. If you had these coins, you could still hold on to them. They have Lady Liberty on the front, 13 stars around it, the eagle from the United States on the back, and they're all clearly marked 1881. Please consider looking at these coins, especially if you already have gold. These are the kinds of things that I buy. But if you, even if you already have gold, these are a good investment, in my opinion. It's Goldline at goldline.com. You can call 1-866-GOLDLINE. Read your own your own stuff. You're smart enough to figure this out. Don't listen. Don't take my word for it. I invest for a different reason, and I buy these coins for a different reason than maybe you do. Find out all you need to know from Goldline and goldline.com. They're waiting for your call now at 866-GOLDLINE. That's 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. Hey, so President Trump just landed in Ireland. I wonder if he said, "Oh, top of the morning to you. Look at the sun." If the media would be as kind as they were to Barack Obama.
Oh, I think so. Immediately they would say that was a very solid Irish accent.
Yeah, yeah.
And approve it completely.
I've got Donna Shalala with me. What?
Yeah, he's the coverage of this is so, I mean, they just, it's all about, like, the balloon. There's a balloon of Donald Trump in the diaper.
I love the fact that that balloon was stabbed. I love the fact the person came up to it was like, he's the greatest president ever. Yeah. And then stabbed it, ripped a hole in it, and so it deflated.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because, you know, usually Republican presidents are not at all popular anywhere overseas. Mm. And Trump is not at all popular in London. Mm-hmm. But in the country, generally speaking, he has a lot of support. I mean, because remember, half of this country voted for Brexit, and basically every world leader said they were terrible, except Donald Trump.
Yeah. No, he's with the people. He's just, I mean, it's just like Ronald Reagan. It was the same thing the way it was, I remember, in Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan would go to England, and he was hated. The only thing was, is he had, almost said Theresa May, Margaret Thatcher, who they hated as much as they hated Reagan. So right. It was the two of them going, I don't really care.
Yeah, Theresa May cares, I guess, or she wouldn't be stepping down. Right?
Yeah, yeah, it's sad for her.
Yeah, and they just like highlight every little thing. They're like, the gift from Theresa May was a document about the founding of NATO and other U.S. Or global organizations. It's like, why is this even a thing?
I hope Boris Johnson gets in because he's just got enough Trump in him that he just doesn't care. I think his hair kind of is like Donald Trump's hair too, and he may be the next prime minister. Which
he's the favorite.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Donald Trump are very popular with people who are sick of the media and the typical politician. I don't care where you are in the world.
You're listening to Glenn.